day and welcome to Detroit Today. I'm 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. We are in the dining room of the Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island during the Detroit Regional Chamber's annual Mackinac Policy Conference. Chance for business, political, and philanthropic leaders to gather on the island to talk about all the challenges that we have in Southeast Michigan, in Lansing, in Washington. Maybe have conversations that they can't have when we're at home. Maybe come up with solutions that we have not thought of. We are talking with as many of the people who are gathered here as possible. And my next guest was a star at last year's Mackinac Policy Conference. Antoine Bryant is the Director of Planning for the City of Detroit.
Stephen, I appreciate that auspicious introduction. It's a bit more than I was expecting, but glad to be here one more time, and thank you for the opportunity.
Well, I mean, I think people were excited to see you for the first time last time, and they were excited by some of the things you said about planning and development and the way we can approach those things a little differently here in the city of Detroit. You talked about a lot of things that you had done in other communities that I think got a lot of our attention. And so that's the reason I wanted to talk to you this year and catch up and say, all right, you made a big splash. How much of it are we really into at this point?
Well, no, I appreciate that, Stephen. We're a ways down the road. I'm excited to say that many people are familiar or may have heard the term SNF, Strategic Neighborhood Fund, refers to Strategic Neighborhood Fund areas, which are typically a collection of neighborhoods that we include in each separate opportunity. And we've made a tremendous headway across the city. One of the things I'm excited about, and I made in our initial comments last year, was that I was committed not only to doing equitable work across the city, but especially in our neighborhoods outside of, you know, the downtown, midtown areas that people are familiar with. And so to date, we've had over $112 million of expended funds in our neighborhoods across in neighborhood plans, in the creation of commercial activity, in residential housing. We have over 117 single-family rehabs through our Rehab and Ready program. It's $12 million committed right there. We've had four parks and open spaces that were created, over $4.5 million there. Six streetscapes. Everyone's very familiar with the work we've done on Livernois, but also on Kercherville and others that have helped to transform those areas and make them amenable and exciting for our residents. And then the one I'm really excited about and that I'm intimately involved in are the neighborhood plans, where our team not only is working with our residents, but we're working in the communities and engaging the people there. And we've completed 10 of those neighborhood plans already.
So one of the things that we talk about all the time now in neighborhood development in particular is this idea of walkability, right? The proximity that your neighborhood has to the things that you need. You're a New Yorker. That means something different in a city like New York than it does in a city like Detroit. Talk about how we can create walkable communities over 139 square miles with, you know, the with the population that we have. It's not a one-to-one translation.
It's not a one-to-one translation. What I would argue, though, is that many of the concepts for walkability, especially for even for a city, quote-unquote, like Detroit, are the same things people want to see wherever they are. So that means safe sidewalks. We determine and define a safe sidewalk not only by a specific width that you need to have, but also the availability for people of various abilities and capacities to navigate that sidewalk, right? So if someone is older, if someone's younger, if someone's physically challenged, if someone's in a wheelchair, can they still get down that sidewalk safely? We're looking at safe intersections, right? So people can cross a street safely and not have to kind of do Frogger whizzing through cars going back and forth, right? Walkability also talks about the vegetation that we use to not only shade you, but also to have breaking up some of the hardscape on a street or on a sidewalk. People are always familiar with kind of the bike lanes, right? They're very polarizing opportunity. But in addition to having a safe way for people to ride a bike, they also serve as a buffer from vehicular traffic. And so a bike lane actually has a number of different uses that people can use. And then lastly, We're looking at increasing the opportunity for signalization. Where do we not only put our streetlights and our stop signs, but also making sure that they are attuned appropriately so that the stops in between them are both amenable both for our drivers as well as for our pedestrians. And so there are a number of things that go into walkability, and we want to make sure that people can traverse our city in as many ways as possible, as safely as possible.
Yeah. So if you say the word neighborhood in Detroit, that means something culturally to us.
100%.
Super important,
100%.
Right? And everybody thinks of their neighborhood as the most important neighborhood in the city, right? I want the things I want now, and you should mm-hmm. be focused entirely on that. But you also have to include me
yep.
in the decision making.
100%.
And that's a place where we have not always delivered in city government, I think, yep. here, in making people feel included. I wonder what you have experienced since you've been here in terms of the response to people in neighborhoods about how they want to be included and how they expect you to make that happen.
So people are integral to a successful implementation of the work they want to see. And what I found is that many of our residents, not only do they want to be included, many of them have already been working on their own.
Right.
And in more times than not, they would rather work in concert with the city as opposed to instead of the city.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Oftentimes, there have been many residents, many block clubs, if you will, that have felt ignored. And so when I actively said I wanted to hear from everyone and participate, many of them appreciated just being listened to. And so it's been kind of open the floodgates now. And now it's exciting to have residents from across the city, whether it's Russell Woods or Brightmoor or Cody Rouge, wherever, that are very passionate. But now we're working together. And, I get text messages. You know, I got one from Shirley Birch on the East Side, who's been phenomenal. Been very excited that we're working together on some work that she's doing on the East Side. Worked with Karen Washington and Pat Birch over what they want to see on John R. And, now we're having frequent conversations, but also I can tie them in directly to resources at the city to help them make many of their desires manifest. And we've come a long way, I believe, just in my short time here, to ensuring that our residents are included in the development of their neighborhoods.
Yeah. I'm talking with Antoine Bryant. He is the director of planning for the city of Detroit. We're talking in the dining room of the Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island during the Detroit Regional Chamber's annual Mackinac Policy Conference. I want to talk about tax policy and how it affects planning and development. There's this recent proposal to create a split tax rate in the city of Detroit, which would tax, vacant land differently from people's houses. The idea is to give residents, those of us who own houses and pay taxes on them in the city, a little bit of a break on our taxes, which we, of course, all badly need. But there are implications for planning and development behind that. We're talking about it in terms of finance and tax rates. It's also about what the city looks like and what neighborhoods look like in terms of vacant land. I wonder what you think of the idea of split tax rate policy, but also what you think the implications are for planning and development.
So that's a fascinating question. And I'll tell you, the split tax, I think there's a real value for it and a need for it for our residents. It'll be a tremendous opportunity to address some of the challenges that we've had from a household to household basis about some of the tax implications. However, I have to buffet that with the reality of what it would look like considering the extensive amount of vacant land that we have
so
in our
much.
Portfolio.
Yeah.
My background's in planning and architecture. It's not in finance and tax, right? And so I have to look at it under using that rubric. I know the office of the CFO and all of them are making some pretty critical analysis about that. I think it's something that it could be a great benefit, but I'm trying to ensure that we can quantify and balance it, considering we have huge swaths of our city, especially on the east side, but definitely all over, where the tax implications of that could be pretty dramatic mm-hmm. on our fiscal bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's value to a split tax. Now, how deep we can use it and how essentially how far down of a quote-unquote split that we can do, I'm a little hesitant on. Because I think that our finance team really has to deliver some real hard solutions to that for the mayor and for council. I think we should do it. I think there's some value to it. Now, how far down it goes, I really can't talk yet about.
Have you been surprised by just how much vacant land we have? I mean, you've worked in other cities. You, again, grew up in New York. It's different here. Sometimes it shocks people when they see it.
It is. I will have to say, it was something that I was aware of academically, right? Something I know of, something that people had told me about. I'd visited Detroit probably a dozen times, various times, I think I told you, before I moved here.
Yeah.
But in this current capacity, in my role, it's incumbent that I not only know the city, drive the city, but I spend a bunch of time, you know, I'll park my car and just walk.
Mm-hmm.
And when you really walk across vast neighborhoods where there might be one or two houses on an entire city block, you get a different perspective. I dichotomize that. I spent 2 days last week back in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
My younger sister got her master's. I had to support her. And I spent a day just walking around Brooklyn where I grew up. And I really realized how dense Brooklyn was when I juxtapose it with where I'm living right now.
Yeah.
And so right when I looked at that, it gave me a different lens. We're in the midst of working with our team on a vacant land strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a lot of land. And one of the things I want to let your listeners know, we're aggressively looking to try to find as many different solutions as possible. The residents have offered a variety of ideas, everything from open space to gardens to parks to dog parks to urban farming to various forms of housing. All of them have validity. What we're trying to do is ensure that those uses are amenable to the context of where they are.
Mm-hmm.
As well as make sense purely from a fiscal standpoint, right? The city still needs to create revenue in some capacity.
Yes.
And so we can't make every vacant land a dog park, right? But, you know, we do think there's enough real estate out there that we can be responsive to the desires of our residents, but also continue to grow a phenomenal Detroit.
Yeah. So speaking of parks, the Joe Louis Greenway broke ground recently, and I think in terms of transformative projects to the way we live in the city, this probably rates top three in my lifetime.
100%.
But I also think if I say Joe Louis Greenway to most Detroiters, they would look at me and not quite understand.
Sure.
What it is. So first, just explain what we're trying to accomplish there.
So the Joe Louis Greenway is going to be an exciting and excellent addition to the open space network here in City of Detroit. We had a running joke in the department. You're not allowed to say the word transformative anymore, right? Because it's almost a drinking game.
Rules.
I heard it way too much in 2022. But it's going to be that much of an impact. It's going to be a loop. 27.5 miles that'll go through over 23 neighborhoods. So it will cross the entire city. And then it's going to link to the DeQuinder Cut and directly down to the riverfront.
Mm-hmm.
It's been phenomenal for me as a new Detroiter to meet residents who don't go to the river or don't go often because they feel that they either don't have an easy access or it's not for them or all these kinds of things. And we're looking for the JLG to be a unifying element to bring people not only to literally and figuratively have a green space in their backyard,
mm-hmm.
but also have a connection to the riverfront. It is buttressing. Over 40% of it will go directly behind residents. Right, so you'll have your own personal green space to some extent. So we're really excited about that. But also the Southwest Greenway broke ground, so that's already underway, and that's part of the JLG. And then a section along West Warren is already under construction right now. And so by 2024, you'll have a significant amount of it completed, and it'll be a tremendous opportunity. Many people may be familiar with the Beltline in Atlanta. There's a High Line in New York. Mm-hmm. There's a number of these kinds of entities across the country, and we're looking for the JLG to be the best of those yet in the country.
Wow, that is a bold ambition.
That's what we're going for.
That's really great.
Go big or go home, Doc.
That's right. I also want to talk about industrial blight. We have two things going on with industrial blight that I think have people's attention. The Packard plant, which has been that way for a really long time, mm-hmm. and that fits and starts trying to get to a different place there. But then we had this great news about the Fisher Body Plant, which mm-hmm. has been empty less time, but is probably more recognizable to people because more people probably drive past it. But the idea that that will come back mm-hmm. to life mm-hmm. at least makes us think about mm-hmm. what's possible at places like Packard.
The mayor's been committed to addressing industrial blight. The city has a phenomenal industrial nature and history to it. It's been built on industry mm-hmm. in many respects. And I think there's an opportunity here for us to recognize and embrace that industrial nature when we look at repurposing entities, but also we now have the resources and ability to demolish things where it makes the most sense.
Yeah.
You know, many of your listeners are probably aware that a judge ruled that we will be demolishing much of the Packard plant,
yeah.
which has been a tremendous, not only eyesore, but a drain
yeah.
on that immediate community. So we're really excited that it's going to be ensuing very shortly. But the Fisher Body plant, which is going to become the Fisher 21 Lofts, embodied and led by Greg Jackson, Richard Hosey, and LaJuan and that group, you know, the largest African-American-led development in Detroit's mm-hmm. history. That's our understanding.
Yeah.
But to transform what's been an eyesore as well into 430-plus units, mixed use over the course of the next couple of years, including affordable housing and some public amenities, is going to transform that opportunity as well. Right now, that is an abandoned, huge 600,000-square-foot building with vacant land around it.
Yeah.
If you walk around there, there's nothing there.
There's nothing there.
But to change not only that entity itself, but by context, the immediate surroundings as well, is going to be a tremendous lift not only for that neighborhood, but for the city at large. And those are just two examples of many, many others that we're looking at. You know, where does it make sense to just demolish it and make a new opportunity? Where does it make sense to revisit, right?
Yeah.
You guys are familiar with some of the other buildings where we're going to be able to transform them and really hearken and look at the past, but also have a new vision for the future. We're really excited about that.
Yeah. And what about our commercial corridors? We've been talking for a long time about those. Some of them are starting to really pop and come back to life. McNichols, Livernois, we've got so many of them, though,
right.
and they had fallen so far. Do we need a sort of grand approach, some sort of master plan for commercial quarters and how they connect to neighborhoods and support neighborhoods and the needs of the people in them?
Ironically, the mayor's laser focused on commercial quarters, right? We've been looking at the stability of our neighborhoods, and it's ironic and challenging that we have a number of very intact, very stable neighborhoods, but when you walk three blocks to the east, the commercial corridor that's there is dying or has been dead for quite some years.
Depleted, yeah.
And so the mayor has focused on it in a number of ways. First of all, many you may be aware of the hire several months ago of our blight czarina, Katrina Crawley, who has been ratcheting up not only the notification and ticketing of bad actors, if you will, on our corridors, but also our team, the plan development, we've been working steadily on commercial corridor design guidelines, which will be a great amenity not only to existing owners, but also to new owners as well, about what we expect to see along our commercial corridors. And so now we have the opportunity to not only fully and critically define what a vibrant community and a vibrant corridor should look like, but we want it to be a place where a commercial corridor in Detroit looks just like one in Farmington or one in Dearborn or one of our neighboring cities. We have a phenomenal city, and our corridors are going to reflect that as well.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for joining us here on Detroit Today.
Thank you, Stephen. Appreciate it.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will have more Detroit Today.